Next case on this afternoon's docket is 17785 TCEQ in Dos Republicas versus City of Eagle Pass, Maverick County Environmental Defense Fund et al. Whenever you're ready.
May it please the court. My name is Bill Cobb. I represent Dos Republicas Coal Partnership, the owner and operator of the Eagle Pass mine. Because Dos Republicas Coal Partnership is a mouthful and my time is limited, I will refer to my client as DRCP. Speaking of time, while the court may dictate otherwise with its questions, I intend to use the first 10 minutes of appellant's argument to address why you should reverse the trial court and affirm the agency's order, finding that DRCP is the operator of the Eagle Pass mine. Dan Wiseman, seated to my left, represents the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, which issued DRCP the wastewater permit that is the subject of this appeal. I will refer to Mr. Wiseman's client as the TCEQ. Mr. Wiseman intends to use appellant's second 10 minutes of argument to address the appellee's cross points regarding the sufficiency of the evidence. I want the court to understand that the court's decision in this case will not determine whether DRCP is permitted to extract coal from the Eagle Pass mine. That issue was decided by this court in an opinion authored by Justice Goodwin, a rather long opinion, last year. The court's decision in this case will also will only decide whether DRCP must amend its wastewater permit application to identify Camino Real Fuels as the operator. Some paperwork and attorney's fees, lots of attorney's fees. DRCP is currently operating under a wastewater permit. The TCEQ's order in this case simply granted an amendment to that permit.
Now, under that prior permit, that was by the prior owner, operator, is that correct?
DRCP obtained permits from TCEQ in 2001, 2006, and 2011. And all those permits in 01, 06, and 11 were issued solely to DRCP. The original wastewater permit in 1994 was issued to a variant on the name.
But this permit is being sought because there are additional, it's a different discharge permit because there are different, my brain is still in cars
the mining
right
operations
now, not in
have
coal.
Changed and expanded. It's,
okay.
it's a rather large piece of land. I think at the beginning they said we're going to mine this part and now maybe this part might be better. So it was necessary to expand the permit for
okay.
those reasons. The central issue before this court is whether the trial court erred when it failed to defer to the TCEQ's determination that a wastewater permit should be issued solely to DRCP as both the owner and operator of the Eagle Pass mine, as that term is defined in TCEQ's wastewater permitting rules. So we know this is a case about wastewater permitting, but what is the wastewater being permitted? Where does it come from? You might be surprised to hear that it doesn't come from coal mining. No wastewater is produced during the coal mining process or discharged during the coal mining process. Unlike with fracking for natural gas, for instance, no water is injected into the ground, no chemicals are injected into the ground during coal mining. So where does this wastewater come from? Extracting coal produces very large holes in the ground, big holes. And when it rains a lot, and I mean a really lot, these holes will fill up with water. And when that water discharges, we have the wastewater discharge at issue here. And when I say it takes a lot of rain, it's a 10-year, 24-hour storm event, to be precise. In permitting jargon, these rainfall events are called intermittent. They are truly few and far between. So all the wastewater at issue in DRCP's permit application originates as rainwater, and it can also become groundwater. And the only effluents at issue here are boron and aluminum, which are naturally occurring in groundwater. They seep into the groundwater from the natural environment. They aren't related to coal. And of course, coal, carbon, which is used in our Brita water filters. So the wastewater that is coming out of this discharge is potable. Now you might be thinking, Mr. Cobb, this is fairly interesting, but what does it have to do with your argument? And the answer is this. The cases provided to you by appellees are in opposite based upon the regime we have here. This is a wastewater permitting regime under the circumstances I've just described, and the cases they've given you are civil liability cases after an unlawful discharge has already occurred. So there are different...
Does that include the Heritage case?
The Heritage case is different. I'm referring to the federal cases, Your Honor. The Heritage case is distinguishable because it was a different Texas statute, and I can get to that now if you would like, but the point of my dialogue on the fact that this is just rainwater overflowing big holes is to say that the standards used by courts when deciding civil liability are truly not at all appropriate. And let me just, I know we all know the standard of review and the deference that we're supposed to accord TCEQ, but I just want to remind everyone that the agency's construction of its rule is controlling unless it is plainly erroneous or inconsistent with the text of the rule. And the U.S. Supreme Court has further instructed us that when the construction of an administrative regulation rather than a statute is at issue, deference is even more clearly in order. And this is particularly true when the rule involves a complex subject matter. So let's talk about those federal cases. The first one, In Re Deepwater Horizon, not from Texas, from Louisiana, doesn't involve wastewater. We all know Deepwater Horizon. It was oil belching into the ocean for months, one of the biggest environmental catastrophes in United States history. The standards under the Oil Spill Prevention Act and the Clean Water Act, the Oil Spill Prevention Act is a subset of that, again, are liability standards. When you are seeking to assess liability, you don't just go after the permit holder. If liability ended there, there would be no reason for these cases to be interpreting this term. Liability doesn't end with the permit holder. In these cases, in the Oil Spill Prevention Act and Clean Water Act, owner-operator is defined as, in the case of an offshore facility, any person owning or operating such offshore facility. It doesn't really tell us anything. In CERCLA, and I don't know why the standard in CERCLA, which is for Superfund cases and hazardous waste, has anything to do with this case, but they are the cases cited by plaintiffs. By the downstream landowners in Maverick County. The term owner-operator means, in the case of an offshore facility, any person operating such facility. So these definitions, again, they're not the same definition as used in the Texas wastewater permitting regulations, and they're not even in the same context. Those aren't federal permitting cases. Those are federal liability cases. So, of course, all parties contributing to an environmental disaster are sought to be held accountable, not just the permit holder. Of course, then, the term operator and its interpretation will likely be much broader and more expansive and capacious than in the permitting process. So Deepwater Horizon doesn't really get them much of anything, and neither does Bear Tooth Alliance. Bear Tooth Alliance did involve wastewater.
Are we arguing the discharge route or something like that? I mean, I thought that we were talking about whether or not DCRP is an operator.
Correct.
And meets the definition of operator under the Heritage decision is what I thought we were looking at here today.
Well, I'm happy to go straight to Heritage and ignore the two federal cases that I had assumed the trial court relied on, because Heritage does not get the trial court there at all. Obviously, as this court knows, Heritage was deciding a case under the Solid Waste Disposal Act.
Well, I mean, there's also a question about whether or not the proper box was checked. I mean, was it operator? Was it owner? Was it owner-operator? Or was it operator? There is that as well, but... bottom line is, are y'all an operator?
We are the owner and the operator.
Right.
There's no question about that, at least according to the ALJ and the findings of fact that it made, findings 40 through 42, that showed DRCP had day-to-day on-site supervision, that not a dollar was spent that they didn't approve, no mine plan was executed that they didn't approve. This is not an absentee landowner. There are cases that this court's dealt with in the Solid Waste Disposal Act context, where there are absentee landowners, and you absolutely do have to have that independent third-party operator on the permit to hold that person accountable. Again, that's in a different regulatory permitting regime, under a different statute, and under different rules. And in fact, the statute at issue in Heritage defines operator as the person responsible for operating the facility or part of a facility. So it necessarily includes someone with less than overall responsibility for the facility, which is the definition under the wastewater permitting rules that the TCEQ applies.
And so is this court bound by the definition that was pronounced in the Heritage decision?
No. In fact, that was interpreting a different regulatory permitting regime, but the court is bound by the principle in Heritage, which is that when TCEQ interprets one of its own rules, like it did in Heritage, this court should defer to that interpretation. Now, it would be nice if operator were defined the same way in every regulatory permitting statute and in every case, but it's not. TCEQ defines operator differently with regard to solid waste, with regard to wastewater. They probably define it differently with regard to air, and I don't even know about it. But in Heritage, they were interpreting the Solid Waste Disposal Act, and in this case, we have wastewater, which is not solid waste. So it seems that I'm at the end of my time. I just wanted to make three points I think I have. And the last that I just want to underline is, in Heritage, this court deferred to TCEQ's interpretation of operator, and this court should do so here.
Good afternoon, and may it please the court. Excuse me. My name is David Frederick. I'm here representing Maverick County. My county judge is here, and various of the citizens have come up to see today's presentations and discussions. I'm going to try to speak for no more than 8 minutes, and then I'm going to turn it over to the counsel for the City of Eagle Pass. I plan to address only two topics. I plan to address the case, the operator provision on which we prevailed at the trial court, and then I want to address with you briefly the anti-degradation argument that the county raised in its cross appeal. Let's start with the significance of even wasting our time or spending our time on this case. I think counsel for DRCP would lead you to believe, first place, I actually said this is just rainwater we're dealing with here. It's not just rainwater. It's rainwater that has fallen into these big pits and collected there, been exposed to minerals and chemicals that have not been near the surface of the earth in thousands and thousands of years. This is more than just rainwater. The county's interest in this springs because the citizens are interested in it, but also because the county has enforcement authority under the Clean Water Act, under the Texas Water Code, to enforce TCEQ permits. And therefore, we would like to have a clear line of authority against whom to enforce a permit. And if DRCP is not, if Camino Real Fuels, what we call the operator, is not on that permit, was not on the application, is not on the permit, we're going to have a harder time enforcing the TCEQ permit against this Camino Real Fuels because it's not a party to the contract. It's just a subcontract to the party to the contract.
So you can't enforce it as against DCRP?
No, it would be very easy to enforce against DRCP because DRCP is one of the two parties to the contract, the
right.
State and DRCP.
Right.
If DRCP is not there very much. It doesn't have very many employees and doesn't have any of the miners.
Well, no, I thought in the record there was testimony in the record that supported the statement that there was somebody there at least every day.
Somebody visits every day.
Okay.
So maybe, it's not impossible, but it is. The record shows there were, at the time of the trial, at least there were 149 employees for Camino Real Fuels, mm-hmm. the operator. There were fewer than 20. Somebody comes out to the mine once a day. I mean, there's a total of three lines of testimony in the entire four-day trial that addresses DRCP's frequency of being at the mine site, what it does at the mine site, which is nothing. It doesn't tell you a thing about what they do there. Anyway, so we would like to have it be clear that Camino Real Fuels, the operator of the mine, is somebody to whom we have direct access. And that happens because the operator is under EPA regulation accepted by TCEQ, a law that's been adopted, held out for public comment and approved. The operator is supposed to be on the application, on the permit itself. That didn't happen here. We'd like to get that fixed. It's also
Is that a court fix, though, or is that a legislative fix?
I'm sorry now? I'm sorry.
Requiring
Camino Real Fuels,
Camino Real, thank you. Requiring them, is that a court fix or is that a legislative fix?
Well, the legislation has already been passed. That is, TCEQ has already, EPA has already promulgated the regulation. Texas had to accept the regulation as part of our program in order to get the authority to issue this permit at all, any of these permits, any of the Texas pollution discharge elimination permits.
Okay.
So the legislation is already there. The agency just had this practice left over from, 20 or 30 years ago before the federal rule came along, and the agency is continuing to follow the practice. But it's not what the agency's regulation requires.
How is the agency's determination that the financially responsible and all that isn't enough?
Okay. First place, I don't think you will be able to find in the agency's order mm-hmm. where that determination was made. It is the order is vague at various turns, but one of which is the agency never says DRCP is the operator because, and it doesn't say Camino Real Fuels is not the operator because. But to answer your question, what we want under both the federal law, and he didn't disparage Beartooth case, that is a mining case. And under the Beartooth case and under the Heritage Homeowners Association case, Heritage of San Gabriel Homeowners Association case, what you want to have in the person against whom you're going to hold the responsibility of the permit, make sure that person does what the permit says that person's supposed to do, you want to have the people who are actually doing it be subject to that permit and be the ones that you can go after easily. So DRCP can have all the... we all agree DRCP is providing the huge bulk of the money, not all the money, not all the financial risk, but most of it. That's all true. It's just there's no logical connection between the financier on the one hand and the person out there actually doing the work on the other. That is, if your objective is to have some way to get at the people who are actually doing the work, to work with the people who are actually doing the work, you would not necessarily go to a financier. You would go to the contractor who's actually doing the work. So we don't see that the DRCP being the source of the money is at all consistent or useful for those of us who would like to have it be that it is clear who is it that this contract control that this permit controls.
So can I ask you the same question about Heritage?
Sure.
Mr. Cobb said it doesn't apply because that's Solid Waste Disposal Act versus wastewater.
The water code.
So why do you believe whether it does apply or not? I'm assuming you do. Mm-hmm. And two, did the trial judge, I think Mr. Cobb said he assumed that the federal statutes are the ones that were what the trial court did.
Look, I can't be responsible for what Mr. Cobb assumes. It's nothing obvious from anything that the trial court judge said or anything the trial court judge wrote that he was relying on Deepwater Horizon or the CERCLA case out of the U.S. Supreme Court. He might have relied somewhat on the Beartooth case because it's a mining case involving wastewater discharges. Heritage of San Gabriel Homeowners Association case is a case interpreting the definition of operator under 30 TAC 305.43. That is precisely exactly the very same regulation that controls who is an operator for purposes of what used to be NPDES, which are now TPDES, wastewater discharge permits. It is simply not true that the term operator, interpretation of the term operator is tied, in the Heritage case, is tied to solid waste disposal as opposed to all of the things that Chapter 305 of Title 30 of the Code covers, and among the things that Title 30 covers is wastewater discharge permits. So my most direct response to you is I just don't think that's a fair reading of the case. I do think if you read Heritage and have staff read Heritage, it's the only case you need to know to decide this case. It also covers all the substantial evidence issues that I'm apparently not going to have time to cover.
Let me ask you one real quick question. Do we even, in your assessment, do we even need to get to this, or does the federal and Beartooth, does that control?
Well, I think that, Heritage of San Gabriel Homeowners Association and Beartooth Alliance, those cases are very similar.
You're not relying simply on the federal cases, though?
Oh, Lord, no, no, okay. No, ma'am. We're relying on, primarily we're relying on Heritage. If Heritage were the only case that existed out there, the trial court got it, and you would get it, too. I guess I won't talk to you about anti-degradation other than just to urge you to put some energy into anti-degradation. It is unattended to.
Well, on the anti-degradation, there was Mr. Murphy had in his testimony, there was some information in there that indicated that there were some of the, I got it right here. That there were water quality samples included within the permit, maybe for a different purpose, but are those water samples, are they sufficient to assist us in this case here today?
If I might, because that actually deals with the issue that was raised by the City of El Paso, and they will just be able to give you a more cogent and less wordy response that gets to the heart of it. The thing I was going to talk to you about on anti-degradation is the so-called Tier 2. Mm-hmm. When you've got water that's already, it's good enough for some animals to do something in, then it's not supposed to get any worse than it was in November of 1975. So that's the Tier 2 anti-degradation. If it's going to be degraded from that standard, then there's some justification that's required. DCQ didn't require any justification in this case. We don't really know why, because as I say, that order is just not anything that much informs one about its underlying reasons. That is a problem at TCEQ repeatedly and has been for years. So if you have the energy to write on the Tier 2 anti-degradation review issue, it would help those of us who practice over there. And anyway, it needs some attention. Answer any questions you have, but I've used up a lot of my time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I know that. I'm sorry.
I know. I just.
But
did
there's
it
so much.
Oh, there's tons. I mean.
So you're not the one who's going to be talking to us about intermittent pools and whether they should have done the same.
No. That is actually the Tier 2 anti-degradation question.
So the whole line of thought that the samples that were done, within the month of the rains.
Got it. Mm-hmm.
And
I'm sorry, I may not have understood Justice Goodwin's question.
So can you tell me why, that's what y'all have as evidence, what you're pointing to. Why would that be good evidence considering that it was done so close to the time of the rains?
Okay. No, so it was the criticism, the agency didn't tell us what its criticism. It doesn't even mention that expert, you would never know we had an expert from the agency's opinion, agency's findings, fact, conclusions, law. Even the ALJ in the proposal for decision lays out a bunch of facts but never draws any conclusion. But let me tell you what I think is going on as honestly as I can. The our expert did water samples in June and July of a year when there had been a lot of rain. So there's a lot of water in these creeks. So as our expert testified, this is common in West Texas creeks. The wildlife begin to move back up into areas that other times of the year are dry. And I think, whereas we view this as, the county views this as, okay, when the wildlife are up there, that's when it makes the most sense for us to figure out if something bad would happen to them because of this discharge. And in our particular case, I think nobody doubts or nobody questions that the discharges will only occur in very rainy times. I think you heard this 10-year, 24-hour storm reference a moment ago. Only when it's raining a lot and all these detention ponds, or actually sedimentation ponds, at the mine fill up and the miners, Camino Real Fuels, doesn't have anything else to do with the water, only then will it start discharging water. Well, that's exactly the time when the streams are going to be flowing a lot because you've been having a lot of rain, because that's why you have all that water in those sedimentation ponds. And logically, I mean, if we're going to defer to the agency's interpretation of its regulation has to be reasonable. It is unreasonable to examine the consequences of discharges from this mine, but only explore those consequences during periods of time when there has been no rain, when the creeks are low, oxygen levels are low, and there will be no discharges. I mean, that makes no sense. So that's my response.
Thank you, sir.
May it please the court, Paul Tuff on behalf of the City of Eagle Pass Environmental Defense Fund and what I call the downstream landowners in this case. And we have four issues on appeal. We don't have enough time to talk about all four, so I'm going to focus on two. And the first is anti-degradation. We heard a little bit from Mr. Frederick, and the second is going to be about the commissioners deleting findings of fact that the ALJs had put into the final order. And so with regard to the first anti-degradation.
Were you here just a little while ago when we were talking about that case? No, go ahead.
With regard to the first anti-degradation, in order to understand what anti-degradation means, it's important to understand what the TCEQ cannot do with regard to anti-degradation. And that is TCEQ cannot issue an industrial wastewater discharge permit that will lower the uses of a water that receives that discharge. TCEQ cannot issue an industrial wastewater discharge permit to a water body and lower the water quality of that water body by more than a de minimis amount. And that applies to, in this case, Elm Creek, which is considered a higher quality water in the hierarchy of waters in the state. And that's admitted to TCEQ in its briefing and its staff testimony. And those prohibitions come from the anti-degradation rules, and they're derived from the Texas Water Code. An anti-degradation review is designed to make sure that those things don't happen. It involves a comparison of data. You're looking at what is in the water body now and what is going to be added by the proposed discharge. And you're doing that for two reasons. One, you have to protect the downstream landowners' uses of those water bodies and maintain those uses. And those uses are fishing, watering their livestock, watering their crops, agriculture, irrigation. And two, you have to make sure that Elm Creek maintains its status as a high-quality water. So that's why you do that comparison. You can't do the anti-degradation analysis without doing the comparison. The implementation standards that the TCEQ has developed discuss that comparison. The ED's fact sheet discusses that comparison. That is their practice, to do a comparison to what is there and what is being added. With regard to this specific application, the crux of the dispute, I think, between us and the commission is when does that need to occur? And we say, based on the rules and the practice of the commission, it must be done before the permit is issued. And that's consistent with those prohibitions that you have to maintain these uses, protect these uses. You cannot degrade the water. That's prohibited. And the only way to do that, again, is to do it on the front end. In this case, the application that was provided to the TCEQ didn't have any data on the proposed discharge.
So attachment K, I found it. Attachment K would not satisfy, it would not satisfy your concerns about having the groundwater data within the permit.
I'm not sure which one attachment K is.
So Mr. Murphy testified that there was some groundwater data already included in the permit, albeit for a different purpose.
That's correct. That groundwater data was not relied upon by the aquatic scientist with the TCEQ who did the anti-degradation review.
Okay.
He didn't rely on that at all. And there's only one person who did the anti-degradation review, and that is Jeff Paul, the aquatic scientist for the executive director. And so there wasn't a comparison that was done, and that's borne out by the fact sheet.
And so I'm thinking that's a no then, that would not allay your concerns.
That's right. Okay. The fact sheet prepared by the ED specifically says, no analytical data is available for screening against water quality-based effluent limitations since the facility has not just discharged. So because they couldn't do the comparison, what the commission did is they added a special condition to the permit. And that special condition to the permit requires DRCP to sample the discharge after it happens, provide the results of that sampling to the commission within 90 days, and then the commission's going to do the comparison. And if there's needs to be a limit in the permit, they will add a limit. But at that point, if a limit is needed, the discharge has already happened.
But how do you ever measure discharge before it occurs?
Right.
I mean, in your view, for a permit, what would be sufficient for a brand new permit before you actually have a mine that's operating?
And great question. The instructions to the industrial wastewater discharge permit application specifically contemplate that situation, and they say for new discharges, you are supposed to provide evidence about what is coming from similar facilities. And in this case, DRCP had access to discharges from other mines in Texas in the U.S. that they didn't provide. There's not an exception in the rule for new discharges, that they don't have to go through the anti-degradation review and be subject to those prohibitions. They must go through that review, and the only way to do it, again, is to do it on the front end. The failure of the commission to do that in this case means the commission has failed to follow its own rules and its policies. And because of that failure, the draft permit that went over to the SOA ALJs and went through the contested case hearing with them ultimately ended up with them recommending that there be additional limits and requirements be put into the permit, which comes to the second issue. And that is the commissioners deleted those additional protections when they adopted the final order. And tab one of the blue covered exhibits, which I think the justices should all have, is a copy of, well, I guess it's black in your case, but tab one is ALJ's findings of fact that were ultimately deleted by the commissioners. And the commissioners delete, these are the additional protections that the ALJs had added to the permit. And the commissioners deleted these findings of facts under the guise that the SOA ALJs had misapplied a policy. But when you look at these findings of fact, number one, and you look at the policy specifically cited by the commissioners in their final order, it's clear that the commission is really just reweighing the evidence and bypassing the SOA judge's independence in this case. And if you turn to tab two, you see those findings of fact deleted here. And again, most of these are simply just facts. They're not disputed. These are not policy decisions.
And let's get to that. What kind of facts are these that we are talking about? Are they... Because I read your briefing to suggest that we should be reviewing on this anti-degradation issue on an arbitrary and capricious standard. And I didn't think that would be the case for these types of facts. Can you explain to me why that would be?
So under this, these facts, what we're saying it should be reviewed under is what is the commission's authority to disregard or change findings of fact. And that authority comes from 2001-058E. And the courts have held that, you know, you still review that under an arbitrary and capricious standard is my understanding. So that's, I think that's why we have that in our brief, or at least the way we've argued it that way. Now, the policy that the commissioners cite.
So let me ask you a question. So are you arguing that you're okay with the SOA saying go ahead and the permit is good and we'll go ahead and test it afterwards? Or are you saying, no, we don't like that, but not only do we not like that, we really don't like what the commission did because they deleted those?
It's the latter. It's both. We don't like the fact that they didn't do the anti-degradation review on the front end, that they're going to allow them to discharge first and then figure out whether or not they've harmed my clients and the downstream landowners.
But if we're going to let them do that, then at least put in the protections that the ALJ...
At the very least, add these additional requirements and protections into the permit that the ALJ determined were appropriate based on the evidence in the record. And the policy that the commissioners cite to delete these these ALJ findings does not justify the deletion of these facts. That specific policy only applies, and they cite to it by page number, it only applies to data provided in the application on toxic pollutants during the application review process. There was no data provided in the application on toxic pollutants. That wasn't done in the application review process. The ALJs didn't misapply this policy in making these findings. And because of that, because they didn't misapply this policy, the commission was without authority to change this final order under 2001-058E. And apparently recognizing the problem with citing this policy in their final order, the TCEQ is now arguing, well, 2001-058E doesn't apply. We're not subject to that. And DRCP despite previously arguing that it did apply, is now saying, yeah, 2001-058E doesn't apply to us. And that's wrong on multiple fronts, but their argument, number one, is that 2001-058E only applies to occupational licensing agencies. That's not right. F applies to occupational licensing agencies only. E applies to all state agencies. And two, they argue that there's another government code provision that governs in this case, and it controls over 2001-058E because 2001-058E is inconsistent. Again, that is not right. The TCEQ specifically used the language from 2001-058E in its final order about misapplying a policy. That language does not appear in 2003-047M, the other provision. That language only appears in 2001-058E. And they ignore the Code Construction Act by not harmonizing these two provisions. And then they finally ignore the Wood case and the Travis County case, which both applied these cases or these standards and did not find them inconsistent. And so it's our belief that 2001-058E applies in this case. The ALJs did not misapply the policy, and the commissioners were wrong to overturn these findings of fact, and we ask that you reverse the commission on this issue.
Thank you.
I am.
May it please the court. I'd first like to address a question that was raised in the owner-operator context, especially regarding the Heritage case. That case does not control the issue here because it involved a different definition. And although the court discussed the definition that is applicable here, that discussion is purely dicta. In fact, that case stands for the proposition.
The discussion of operator is dicta in Heritage?
In Heritage, the applicable definition of operator in the landfill context was the person or persons responsible for operating the facility or part of the facility. Whereas here, the definition that applies to these water discharge permits is the person with overall responsibility for the facility's operation. So these are completely different definitions that require different outcomes. And while this court did refer to the definition at issue here, at best it's dicta. It relies on a dictionary definition and without the benefit of the agency's expert interpretation.
So it didn't need to go that far.
It did not need to go that far, Your Honor. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, because, I mean, that's a possibility, but it's out there. We're bound by Heritage unless we can somehow distinguish it or unless it's inapplicable or if we, you know, otherwise we have to look at it. If we're to do what you're suggesting and not follow it, either we have to distinguish it or we have to overrule it en banc to do what you want us to do.
I disagree, Your Honor, because it is purely dicta. At issue in that case was a landfill issue. The only question before the court, the only dispute, was who was the proper operator under the definition applicable to landfills. And in deciding what that definition meant, the court looked to other definitions throughout the administrative code, including the one here. And so, because it was not necessary to the outcome, it is the definition of dicta, and therefore the court is not bound by it. Now, secondly, regarding the degradation issue, just to be clear what the purpose of that that process is, to establish a baseline of what the receiving waters will be like as throughout the year, their standard condition. And that's why it was inappropriate for the study to rely on samples taken after a heavy rainfall. And there's expert testimony in the record from Dr. Glass, who stated specifically that it was inappropriate to use this time period after a heavy rainfall because those streams that would be intermittent, that is, you know, partly dry throughout the year, are now flowing into perennial waters that support fish. Those fish migrate throughout the length of the stream, so they're in places where they would not normally be. And flood stock tanks the heavy rain could flood stock tanks, with the result that there will be fish where there otherwise would not be. So the purpose of the anti-degradation review with respect to the receiving waters is not to look at the moment in time when the discharge is most likely to occur, but to establish what the receiving waters generally are. Now, with regard to the effluent, it was stated that there is a requirement that the, in the absence of an actual discharge, that the applicant use a certain type of data.
Similar facilities.
What the rule says is that the report must include information detailed enough to allow evaluation of the water and environmental quality considerations involved. And there's guidance documents. Worksheet 2.0 of the TCEQ states that if the application is for a new discharge, results from similar facilities, treatability studies, design information, or literature sources may be submitted when real effluent analytical data is not available. And that's just what was submitted here. Dos Repúblicas described the nature of the facility. They explained how the discharges would likely result. They noted the existence of the Railroad Commission permit and all of the conditions that were attached to it. Importantly, it noted that it would be subject to a very detailed set of federal regulations that had been developed as a result of a study of mining and effluent throughout the country. And this was sufficient to satisfy the ED, it was sufficient to satisfy the ALJs, and it satisfied the commission. And there's no requirement that the protestants can show that DRCP failed to meet. Now, turning to the question of the changes to the PFD, first of all, we disagree that 2001-058 is the appropriate statute. The more specific statute, 2003.047, controls over the general. But here, it doesn't matter, because the agency complied with both.
And is there a complaint about 047? Was that raised below?
The protestants did not cite that particular statute, and we argue that the complaint is waived. And to the extent, though, that the court finds that it was not waived or that 058 somehow should be read in conjunction with 047, which we disagree with, again, all of the requirements were met. Now, the specific findings that they claim to be basic findings are actually recommendations. For example, the two main findings that they complain about are that the permit should include limits, it should include monitoring requirements, and that should is not really a fact in the way that we think of a traffic light being red or green. And moreover, the should derives not from a statute or a rule, but from what the ALJs believe the commission's policy to be. And the commission.
And did y'all provide that policy to the ALJ?
Yes, Your Honor. That policy was admitted into evidence.
So you disagree with their assertions that the ALJ was not provided those policy documents?
That is false. The ALJ was given the policy documents. The executive director admitted it into evidence, and it is in the record. And that very policy document is cited in the commission's lengthy and well-reasoned explanation of changes, in which they say specifically that they are reversing the ALJ's decision with respect to those recommendations because the ALJ's misapplied commission policy, and they cite to that document. And what is not said by the protestants is that the commission didn't simply delete these findings. They imposed additional requirements that they found to be more meaningful and robust because they were based on actual data. The ALJs had used groundwater data to surmise what the effluent might be like. but the evidence showed that any discharges would be intermittent, they'd be stormwater driven, such that any groundwater that managed to seep into the mine pit would be substantially diluted, and there was no actual data showing that it met the threshold requirements identified in that policy document that the TCEQ would generally require limitations or monitoring requirements for. So in that sense, it's plain that the agency followed the requirements of both statutes. And I know that Professor Beal has been cited earlier, and I want to point out what he has to say about this particular subject in 2001.058 in particular. He notes that in a 2005 article that it would border on the absurd to hold that the legislature intends that an ALJ who is not an expert in a particular regulatory area could bind the agency and subsequently the judiciary as to the meaning of the law, and referring to the requirement that the agency issue a written policy document, he says, if the ALJ misinterprets these statements or addresses a new unanticipated legal issue, then clearly the agency may substitute judgment for that of the ALJ on the basis of reasons of policy. And that's exactly what the commission did here. And unless the court has further questions.
So did I hear you say that that the commission actually, even though it deleted those monitoring additions, that it put either more stringent testing, or they did something different and better?
That's correct, Your Honor. They, and partly in response to a request by one of the protestants, they required a more frequent sampling of the discharges, and they required it to exist throughout the life of the mine, and it allows the ED to impose any necessary limits, not just on aluminum or boron, and it believed that
if discovered after a discharge,
it
right?
requires yes, Your Honor, it would be based on actual data
on a discharge.
Yes, Your Honor.
But I didn't mean to interrupt. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. Just in conclusion, that, according to the commission, who is responsible for implementing this policy, basing that sampling requirement on actual data is more protective of the state water than imposing a hypothetical limitation or monitoring requirement, which does not represent the type of effluent that will be discharged from this facility. Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't understand how removing protections and limitations is more protective, but if that's what the state is arguing, then I guess we need to address that. The final order that ended up that the commission's ultimately adopted did remove the boron limit and the monitoring requirement for aluminum. And again, that was removed based on this statement that the ALJs had misapplied a policy. But if you go and look at the policy that they cite, it's talking about data on toxic pollutants. And boron's not a toxic pollutant. It's not identified as a toxic pollutant. And so removing boron, the limitation on boron, does not fit with that policy. Again, because no data was actually provided in the application. And the
guy. So you disagree with his argument, Mr. Weissman's argument, that it allows to not only limit aluminum and boron? You disagree with that? It allows to limit anything else?
The
testing. So if I heard him right, his argument is that there's more protection now because there's going to be more continual testing or more testing, and it doesn't just specify boron or aluminum, that you can actually test for more than that, including
boron and aluminum, and it would allow the ED to do whatever was necessary if they found that. Do you disagree with that?
No, the testing after they've discharged is for more than boron and aluminum, because there are more constituents in this wastewater than boron and aluminum.
But I just thought that you just said that the policy didn't deal, only dealt with, and I forget the...
Toxic pollutants.
Toxic pollutants. Yes. And I thought you were making an argument that since boron is not a, since it's natural, it's not a toxic, that they could then not restrict or could not monitor or couldn't do anything. Is that not your argument?
No, my argument is that the policy that the commission relied upon or said that the ALJs misapplied would not even apply to boron anyway. And so there's no way the ALJs could have misapplied that policy because it didn't apply to boron because it's not a toxic pollutant.
Okay, so I understand where you're going. I thought you were going somewhere else.
And could you address the preservation issue on 2003-047?
Yes, we did not raise a 2003-047M, or we didn't cite it in our motion for rehearing. We cited and argued that they violated 2001-058E because the justification they provided is that the ALJs misapplied a policy. And that is the exact language from 2001-058E. That language does not apply or appear at all in 2003-047M. And so that's where our argument and our motion for a hearing went, and that's what we're arguing here. With regard to providing data in the application, the instructions to the application, which are a guidance document that the TCEQ has, specifically says to provide results from similar facilities when real effluent analytical data is not available. They're talking about data, not a narrative description of the type of the facility. They're asking for data. And the rules require you to provide enough information about the characteristics of the effluent. The effluent in this case is not, again, limited to aluminum and boron. Those are just the two that we've focused on because there was groundwater data to support those. And the groundwater data that the ALJs found persuasive to put these limits in. But there are other constituents in this case. There's selenium, iron, lead, manganese, TSS. There are a lot of other constituents and pollutants that are in play that did not get the anti-degradation review. But we provided what data we were able to get through the discovery process. And again, that's what we focused on, aluminum and boron. So again, we asked that the commission, or this court reverse the commission on this issue. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The calls will be submitted.
Are we going to push through? Mm-hmm.